Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please make sure the volume of this podcast is set perfectly to your listening enjoyment. Please take your seat, whether that's on the treadmill, car, sofa, or bed, and buckle in for the last trip. My name is Jamie Beebe, and I'll be your tour guide, recreating someone's last days in paradise. On behalf of myself and everyone behind the scenes, please enjoy the Last Trip podcast. And because nobody likes a long flight to get to where they want to be, let's prepare for takeoff. There's this moment at the beginning of a trip where everything still feels open. You've just arrived somewhere new, the air feels different, the streets don't quite make sense yet, and you're exactly where you wanted to be. For Jenny Chen, that feeling stretched across an entire country. She was 26, living in Seattle, and in early 2016, she set out on a solo trip through Mexico. She was traveling the way a lot of backpackers do, moving from place to place, hitchhiking, couch surfing, meeting people along the way. And for weeks, everything seemed to be going exactly as planned. She stayed in touch. She checked in. She posted on social media. She let people know where she was and where she was headed next. Until, suddenly, she didn't. The last time anyone heard from Jenny was April 11th, 2016, in Oaxaca. She was supposed to make her way across the country and meet her husband in Cancun just a few days later. But she never made it. At some point along that journey, there was a reported sighting. Someone said they saw her getting into a truck, possibly a commercial delivery truck, heading in the opposite direction. And then, nothing. No confirmed sightings, no phone activity, no trail to follow. Her husband, John Reinhard, started searching for answers, working with local authorities, reaching out to the U.S. Embassy, trying to coordinate with Jenny's family in China. But like so many cases involving travelers abroad, the investigation didn't move in one clear direction. It splintered. Different countries, different systems, and no clear path forward. And underneath all of that is something much simpler. A husband waiting for his wife to arrive and realizing she's not coming. Today, John is here to tell Jenny's story. John, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Can you start by telling us who Jenny was? How would you describe her to someone who's never met her?
She was a spitfire, young Chinese girl that wanted to rule the world. She approached me. So I got into China. I'd been there a couple months. And I was living in a place called Hangzhou, China, which is about an hour south of Shanghai. I didn't really know any friends. I had a few of the other English teachers I'd hang out with. And I lived in an area that was foreign factories, mostly Japanese, and in European, and some American, and 10 universities. So I was a school teacher surrounded by college kids and a mid-40s guy. So one of the teachers that I was teaching at the elementary school, I was teaching guys, says, why don't you, if you want to meet some Chinese people, why'd you come? On Saturdays or Sundays, we go to the park. And it's called English Corner, where the Chinese come to practice their English. So they want to meet foreign people. So I'm like, yeah, great. So I get completely wired on caffeine, and I'm just talking to people and blurting it out. And along comes this cute 5'3", young, beautiful girl. And she walks up to me and she says, do you like Kentucky Fried Chicken? And I said, no. And she got my phone number, and we talked, and we vibed a little bit. But... And I'm like, no way, this girl, this is, I wanted to date a Chinese girl, and I had all these people calling me, but most of them just wanted to practice their English. So I felt like an English punching bag, that people just want to kind of use me to improve their English rather than get to know me or go on a date with me. So I was like really standoffish to her. I'm like, no, leave me alone. You just want to practice English. You're very cute. I'd be attracted to you. But she persisted. She kept calling me. Day after day after day, I was like, fine. And I said, do you have any idea what it's like to date a foreign white man? No. Well, do you want to try him? Yeah. Okay. So away we go dating. And so she was super persistent. She had her own business in college where she was picking up students' laundry and running it in my washing machine in my apartment. And they coming out and giving them money. She started a business. So it was called Tootproof Laundry Cleaning. So, and she was on her house. So I'm like, oh my God, here's this cute, adorable girl, half my age, beautiful. Wow, I like China. This is great. You know, so we dated for several years.
She sounds amazing. And then she ended up moving to the U.S., right? What was life like for her in the U.S.?
So we were together for 3 years in China. She lived with me. And me and our cat, we even got a cat. And I just got sick of it. I want to go home. I decided I need to go home. You can come see me. You can visit me. We'll see what we can do. And, you know, and marriage was in the discussion. But I wasn't, you know, I was thinking about that because I'm like, Raj, I mean, I can unleash this girl in the United States. She wants to just make money. And the way she's driven, oh my God, we're going to light the world on fire. Power couples. You know, yeah, power couple. So I went back and we coordinated her to come over. And then she came over later on a tourist visa and we got married. In China, you know, it's relative, who knows English, what they, how their English is. Whereas if you go to the United States, you can really find out how bad their English is. I didn't realize that her English was not that good to like really get a decent job, even out of college, even though she had a work visa and all these things because we're married. She started as a bank teller and she hated it. She really, really hated it. So everything started well. We were living on the beach. She could every morning go out and get seashells. And we're living on the beach in Elkhai, beach in West Seattle. Beautiful place. You know, our neighbors were awesome. Our next door neighbors, we lived in a duplex. They had parties every night. And Jenny was like, oh my God, what's going on in the United States? And so that was when we lived in that house, it was wonderful on the beach. Unfortunately, we got in with the landlord and we had to move out and we moved to somewhere else. And that's when I quit my job for a new job. And she says, well, you're quitting your job. I'm going to quit my job, get a new job. I said, fine. And she couldn't find another job. You know, I'm an experienced sales guy. I've been in and out. You know, so I got a job. And she looked at my offer letter. And I think she just felt deflated. And I wasn't making that much money, but it was a lot of money to her compared to minimum wage as a bank teller. That's when she kind of, I don't know. That's when it changed. She tried to look for work, and I tried to help her, but her language barriers were hard. So we're going to get her into language school. But she just resigned to like sitting in a beanbag chair and blogging on the internet while I was working at my new job. I come home every day. And again, I'm not an old-fashioned guy, but marriage is a partnership. And she just got depressed. She didn't cook. She didn't clean. She was sitting and just blogging. And apparently on Chinese blogs and complaining about me, which I didn't realize until this stuff happened. So It was lukewarm. She kind of isolated herself where she had no friends. She didn't want me going out and being with my friends and drinking and all that stuff. Look, I'm a partier and that's what I do. And she knew that in China. But of course, you know, when she got here, she was in this strange place with no friends and no job, just waiting for me to come home. And I'm coming home after a 10-hour day, totally stressed out. And then she wants to go out and do stuff. And it just was exhausting for both of us. Really, really exhausting. And the word in wise is you got to get those expectations out before you make those commitments. But it was more, you know, when you're bringing somebody overseas, if they're going to stay, you got to marry it. It was convoluted. So, but my job was going great. I was doing well. But I come home from a stressful day. And I was sitting here on the couch, and I'm like, I need a damn drink. And it just, when the place is a mess, she would only make food for herself. And it wasn't her fault. It was expectations, and she was depressed. So I said, baby, you got to do something with your wife. I did not sign up for marrying someone that I married the girl that had her own business in China and was ready to put the world on fire. And it's not her fault. She was depressed. And I was drinking more because I was so stressed out and there's no excuse for it, but all the pressure was on me. And I married this thing sitting in a beanbag that I was getting to see. I was stunned. So I said, let me help you. I will help you pay for your school. We are going to get you back to college. We are going to re-educate you. We're going to get your, because she has 3 days. She's a whiz. She could have gotten to Harvard. She's a whiz. She said, okay, first, I'm going to go on a trip. And at this point, I'm at my wit's end. And I said, wherever you want to go, I will support you. Go, get your head on straight, come back, and then it's go time. Deal? Deal. And so I was spending her $1,500 a month for hotels and transportation. So that's kind of where it started. That was almost 9 years ago about this time. So she said, okay, I'm going to go throughout. I want to travel through Mexico. I'm going to go. I'm like, baby, stay in those months. Get hire a taxi. You have any money. And stay off the main road. You don't know in Mexico. And again, this is someone who just got out of college in China, which blocks most media. So the rest of the world is foreign to most Chinese. They're like North Koreans, some of them, that just come over. They don't know the rest of the world because they're in the Chinese bubble. I said, baby, I support you. And I want you to get off my freaking beanbag and get out there, get your head on straight so you can come back and be the person that I love, that I married. And perfect. Deal. Deal, deal.
How long had she been gone at this point on her trip? And what was she telling you about her trip?
Jenny Chen's up there. She had all her pictures. She was having a time of her life. And I'm like, I was so happy for her. And I got better. I was skiing. I was happy. I'm like, okay, this was a nice little celebration. So she was gone for, I think, a month and a half. And she was traveling. Now, the money I was sending her. Now, I don't want to invite any people. However, Chinese can be somewhat frugal. I was sending her $1,500 a month. She was putting that in her bank and hitchhiking. Lying to me. I did not know.
And did you think that she just didn't understand the dangers of hitchhiking? Because it seems like she was relatively naive about a few things.
It's not even hitchhiking in China. She didn't know what that was. She met a couple German guys at a youth hostel, and they said, all right, man, don't hitchhike on the road. So a bunch of idiot fucking German assholes told her to go hitchhiking's okay in Mexico. And she believed them. Because they were cool and they were drinking beer with her at the youth hostel. Again, you have to picture the person. We're subject to so much in the United States and in the Western world of media. We can know that here, there's too much danger. There's too much fear. There, in China, it's a communist utopian bubble where they're like, everything's great. Everyone has sex except in China. So they're naive.
She was young as well. I mean,
she's 21 years old. I'm half my age. Beautiful girl.
Did you know the general route that she was taking through Mexico or the plan? I think you were going to meet up in Cancun.
Yes. Yes. She was going through Ensenada all the way down. And I thought she was taking buses and dropping my plane, but she wasn't. I think she hit Puerto Vallarta. Then she made a big jaunt down to Mexico City. And then she went to Oaxaca. And that's the last time we had a conversation. She said, I'm going to be out of touch for 3 days. And don't have cell phone coverage because I'm going from Oaxaca to Cancun. I flew down to meet her. So we were planning to meet. Hey, we're looking forward to it. I'm like, baby, there's buses for 50 pesos. So rather than spending 50 pesos on a bus, let's say $25 on a bus, she wanted to save that money and hitchhike. The only way to be home, that area from Oaxaca to Cancun is the number one river, only from Guatemala. from South America. Said she was hitchhicking. Holding up a sign, please sex traffic me. Please sex traffic me. I'm a Jew and a Chinese girl. I'm making money. Because I hired a private investigator and they canvassed the whole area and knocked on doors showing her face. And we found out where the rest stop she stayed at. I saw her writing because she hitchhiked in Mexico City. She hitchhiked and a cement mixer picked her up. And they told me at midnight, a cement mixer picked up my private investigator and dropped her off at the seediest, most dangerous truck stop in this hemisphere. The shopkeeper came out, ran out, and grabbed her, and said, you're staying with me tonight. The shopkeeper, I talked to the shopkeeper. They said, get the fuck out of here and get in this. And for some reason, I didn't think for her. I didn't think for her. Oh, that can bother me. I don't want a coat. I don't want a snort coat. The reason why I know that thing is because she was with her daughters, and she was writing in Chinese her daughter's names. So she showed me the Chinese writing. I'm like, holy shit. And that was it. The next morning, she woke up and had a sign saying Karen Coon, and they said, Jed, they found her alive. But the ride was late. A truck rolls up. A Korean beer truck rolls up. And they said, don't go in there, don't go in there, don't go in there, don't go in there. She got in. And that's the last I ever heard or saw her. She stepped into a Korean Modelo truck. I have the emails to show for it. I know it's fucking stranger than fiction, but fuck, it happened. Corona, a driver for Corona, picked her up, and I have his name, face, GPS coordinates, everything. Which were erased for that day, by the way. The GPS coordinates were erased for that day. I have the data. I have that.
Before we get into what happened, how did you find out that she was missing? Were you in Cancun at this point and she just doesn't show up and you can't get a hold of her?
We were still applying to Cancun and she said, I need to be in touch.
What she's only at Sushi.
That was sort of the conspiracy theory that, was she planning on leaving me? Was this a big ruse for me to show up and she ran away with some guy? Maybe.
So I show up in Cancun.
And she's not there at the airport. And I said, and drink margaritas for the next 4 hours till I'm like drooling on the table. And she never showed. I got my hotel. I said, oh, she's probably delayed. Damn girl. And so I kept calling her, texting her, and I went to my hotel room. And then the next day, nothing. So I went to the police, and the police said, well, you got to wait for the. And they were casual. People do something here all the time, which is sure Mexico. You know, it's Mexico. People, they'll purposely take a Mickey and then go wild for a week, and then you find them sleeping in a sewer somewhere. You know, it happens all the time, I guess, to Americans. So they're like, no. You got to wait 3 days and then come back, and we'll do a report. I'm sitting there trying to enjoy myself, drinking myself to sleep continuously. And my mind is going wild. I'm
angry. I'm like, that bitch just blew me off.
That's what happened. You know? What the hell? I'm going to have words with her. But I better sober up. I've been drunk for 3 days. So I go to the police. I file the report. I get on a plane and I come home and I now see on Facebook. And it just blows up. And again, I just got back from China, which doesn't have Facebook.
So I didn't even know what Facebook was. I was in China for 4 years. I changed back to Mexico. So
and people are like, well, you got to announce this on Facebook.
And the truth are coming out. Well, why is he saying he's single?
Why is he saying this? So the truth came out and just mauled me big time. You know, and it just flew off us on the news. And I had the news showing up. And of course, that's where the weirdos come out. My 5 minutes of fame or whatever, my 5 minutes of fame were 5 minutes of hell and harassment. People accusing me of murder. People asking me why I went for 3 days. The Chinese wanted to put me in a Chinese prison for waiting for 3 days not to call the authorities. Even though I did, they wanted to put me in jail. They said, we're going to the embassy
tomorrow.
And I said, fine. And I talked to that investigator. He goes, if you do that, you're gone, dude. You're gone. This podcast would be, what the fuck ever happened to Jonathan Leinart? I would be ghost that I didn't get on that plane, and I'm so lucky I didn't, because
The American said,
hey, she's not a citizen, not a problem.
The Mexican said, come on down and spend more money.
We'll just give you a smile and a wink.
And
we're in bed with those people anyways who kidnapped her. So we're not going to do shit, but keep spending your money here.
And then the Chinese said, it's an easy thing. It's not
motherfucker's fault.
It's Reinhardt's fault.
Let's throw him into jail. He's a drug addict and an alcoholic. Because apparently my wife was complaining that I was smoking too much weed and drinking to our Chinese friends. They wouldn't help because she said, you're just spending on drugs. When I asked to help find her. That's what the Chinese said. Well, you're a drug addict. You'll just spend her on drugs and an alcoholic. That's what she said. I'm like, holy shit.
Wow, so you were just crucified on the internet.
It's a disgusting knot in your stomach and in your gut that when you're close to someone, you know this, we know this, that there's a gut when you're on the barn with something,
that something's fucked up and wrong.
And I'm blaming myself and hating myself, and the truth on top of it
are just showing you.
You should die and go to jail, you piece of shit,
a white fuck.
That's what they were saying.
Get out of the angels. Let's talk about the good people. I started a donation with.
I got fucking Corona beer to pick it
to pay for all my trips. Corona beer paid for first class.
Because you searched for her and searched for her and searched for her. After you left Mexico the first time, I mean, you kept searching for a long time.
Well, this is the interesting thing, is when you're at that point, you see the good, the bad, and the evil. You see it. So the good came.
And I had help. And I had people reach out and say, hey, this happened to my friend. I know a great private investor. You got to get a hold of him. I heard people reaching out to give me words of encouragement.
And that was very touching.
Yes.
So
they said, you need to start a GoFundMe page. Give me a second.
Take your time. I know it's really hard. And I appreciate you doing this.
Don't worry about it. It's like, it has to be exercise. And anyways, they said, you need to get a GoFundMe page. You need to start raising funds to help pay because you got to get a private investor. It's
can I have
some money? But I went through all my savings, all my retirement, all that to help her. And plus a GoFundMe. Plus,
I had people help me find a private investigator.
They helped me walk me through the steps of woman named Carol. But when you're in hell, sometimes you see angels.
You do.
And that was one of them. And I'm thankful for her.
Give me a second.
Take your time.
I met after Fernando. She's a PI and he's good. And he said, look, this is what we need is a retainer and we'll get the works. So their team got called to the hospitals. All the, you know, all the lawyers. All the,
they canvassed any possible trail from Oaxaca to Cancun.
And they found her. They found where she last was at that truck stop.
Now, people wanted to meet me. Looking wanted to this. People wanted to ask. So every other week, and in the meantime, I'm trying to keep my job. I'm trying to work. I got to pay the rent. But I'm going every other week for 4 days in Mexico, meeting with the government officials, listening to their bullshit. But you think that I would be like, fucking Mexico, well, and all this shit.
I fell in love with Mexico. I fell in love with it. Because I'm out there grinding and meeting cough and looking for and knocking on the door and playing cameras. Well, the evening was mine. So I got to go out in Mexico City and enjoy it. And just, I need a reprieve. So I'm going to go on and drink as much tequila as I can and go out in the town and just scream. And I landed. I love Mexico.
It was just crazy for someone that this happened to.
I'm grateful for the people that came in. Anyways, investigation's coming along. We have to get the guy who, the Corona truck driver, we got him on a polygraph. He didn't pass. He didn't pass the polygraph.
Wow. So you found him. He didn't pass the polygraph. Were the authorities in on this part with you, or was it just the private investigator? Were they helping you at all?
Corona helped me through this whole thing. If you look deep into my basement, I had everybody and my friends launch a campaign against Corona. Corona kidnapped my wife.
So this damaged, wounded, alcoholic man who's in just the worst place of his life, just this olive branch to
Corona beer, wine the first class, four-star hotels. Just charming me up. Why? PR. At the same time, the data from the truck and the GPS on that one was erased. So I believe, and I can't prove this, that Corona was like, we don't need the bad press. This guy was a bad actor. We get it. And we know the cartel and we know they operate. There's nothing we can do. So let's just make him feel good.
And they did.
But they were blocking the investigation at the same time. I believe they're blocking the investigation at the same time while treating me like a king. And I ate it up.
A wounded person getting off their star hotels in Mexico City in first class. It was awesome.
And so they're really, really, really good at that. So we got paying for it. And it would pay for my private investigator. We were on the tracks. We're interviewing the guy. We finally got the guy. He failed the polygraph test and nothing happened. And once he failed the test, Cronbier told us this word and they disappeared. And that was it. I had no money left. The authorities didn't do anything. They just wore me down with pleasure. Hey, basically saying you're sorry. Like, here's a bunch of tequila and a four-star hotel. No hard feelings. Seriously.
I ate that fucking shit up. I beat that shit up. Because when you're in that state of mind, I don't know if I'm going to live or die, and I'm going to hurt myself. I'm going to hurt other people because I'm so angry at this happening. And then also, I had to go to a warehouse and look at hundreds of bound corpses with bullet holes in their heads to find my wife. I will never forget that scene or that sight. And I just said, the world is fucking evil. And I don't want to be a part of it anymore. This world is fucking fucked.
I mean, I really can't imagine the pain that you've been through with this, the trauma and the pain.
It's more than pain. It's so evil. It's like eating a bunch of Bowery's and being angry.
You're sick to your stomach that you need to throw everything up. That's how you're above anger. You just feel like you feel disgusting. You just feel the world is sick. Thank God other angels approached my life. Emily Galeazza from Paris was covering how the cartels were, and she was an endangered species because Janos was getting popped left and right. And she'd come with me and she'd drink with me and we'd talk. And she, thank God for her. Because I was on my own. I didn't know anybody. My job was about to fire me. I had to get fired from Frontier Communications for missing so much work. And my attitude. My attitude was bad at work. That's what they told me. I was fired for bad attitude and lashing out while going through my wife being either sold into sex trafficking or murdered.
There's no handbook for what you went through. There's no play-by-play, like, this is how you're supposed to act.
I'm writing it. And if anything comes from this podcast is that if anybody has lost someone in Mexico, reach out to me. Please. I can help. I've been through it. I know. I've seen it all. I've seen it all. And I can tell you right now, yes, I sound angry, hurt. I'm tears in my eyes. I'm drinking right now, but I am a genuinely happy fucking person right now. And I went through hell and I got out of it. So anyone who needs that help and that support, I'm at the best thing that I can with the energy that I have left, I will be happy to point them in the right direction. Please contact me.
And you searched for Jenny for years and years and years. What was it like? And at what point did you have to, I guess, pull back and start living your life again? Because I think that took so much from you.
It started with excitement and hope. And I'm coming down, I'm going to find her where she goes. And I'm going to yell at her when she gets home. When I see her, I visualize that. In my mind's eye, she was coming through the door and I was screaming at her for being so stupid. That's what I thought. Every time I go down to Mexico, every time I go. Every time I came back, it turned into like, yeah, I've done some fucked up things in my life, but I deserve this karma. Okay. You know, if this is the way it is, I'm cursed. I just thought I was cursed. And so I can be a cursed person. I was 30 pounds heavier than I am today. I'm going to take out credit cards and max them out and travel and abuse myself, kill myself in the most fun way possible. I'm going to kill myself. by going to drink and substance abuse myself into oblivion. And I'm going to laugh because that's what the world wanted for me. That's what the universe wanted for me. And thank God I have some people in my life, my uncles, Barkley, hippie uncles. So I always go to them. We sit in the yoga and they got a view of the Golden Gate Bridge and a hot tub that you can't wear clothing in and gardens. And I've always gone to them for support. So they, my uncle was the head of the languages department at Berkeley, Cal Berkeley, and his husband was the head of the pottery department. I hate myself. I hate my life. I'm cursed. Do you fuckers have anything to say to me? And my uncle going to send me down and say, hey, man, you need to let this go. You need to let this go. And through meditation and self-thought, I started that journey, got a psychiatrist, got on medication, working out. That's when things turned around for me. It was hard.
Have you had any closure in this? Do you have an idea in your mind of what you think happened?
I think the trailer driver said, oh, I got a hot one for you, Mr. Cartel Boss. I got a good one. This is going to be $1 million girl for you. I'll bring her right to her. I will drug her and bring her right to you. And either she's dead or she is not the version of the woman that I know 8-10 years ago. That's what I know in my gut that happened. And the government said, yeah, well, this is $1 million girl. And this gringo, she's stupid enough to do this. Her fault. She's dead or in a brothel as we speak.
Do you think in any world that you would see any type of justice? Do you think anyone will ever pay for?
No. I don't need it. When you go to hell and you want to die and bring every motherfucker with you, and you want to, I'm going to go to burning bad fire off this cliff and you're going to bring every motherfucker with me. You go from that attitude to like it happened. I'm going to learn from this and I'm going to fucking grow up. And it took a lot of psychiatry, a lot of medication, a lot of alcohol, a lot of substances to be the person that I am today.
Here's a kicker that people don't understand.
I could have just said, hey, people would have said, oh, yeah, he's on disability. He's messed up because he lost his wife and all fucked up. Well, I'm laying in that chair and put him next to a window and give him drugs. He deserves that.
Fuck no. I'm letting this shit go and I'm going to fucking let the world know that you did not beat me. That's justice. Hey, Mr. Fucking Cartels.
I'm still standing. You took my wife and you used and abused her, made a lot of money. You're going to fucking hell, motherfucker. You're living in it.
I'm not. I'm happy. I'm doing better than work. I'm going with my family. I'm healthier than I've ever been. Why? Because when you go to hell and you go out of it and you handle it on your own and you grow on your own and the fucking phoenix rises. So now I can't tell you this story. I couldn't even talk about it a couple of years ago. I can. And I can tell you that I'm my own person now. And I'm stronger because of it. And I know this is a grand story, but I want to let people know out there, if they're ever in this, I am the poster boy of you can fucking come out of it. I'm out of it. I can talk about this. Yes, I've got teared up. Yes, I can't do it without alcohol. But I'll tell you what, Jamie. I hate to say this, but that happened. I would not be the person I am today. That's a giving, kind person. I help nonprofits now. I do prayers for nonprofits. I support the causes. I have an energy level. I have a wonderful family. Not my family, but my cousins. I got a cat. She's awesome, too. So I fucking came out of it. And so I can talk about this. Now, the justice? The cartels do what they do. My wife made a mistake. What I do not forget, and I would love to have justice here, or the motherfucking trails that came after me. I heard a donation bank. They mirrored it and changed the world and just disparaged it against me. She started a medical site to insinuate that I was a murderer to stop me getting funding. I had to take her to court. I have the lawsuit documents I can show as well. Because she started a page of trolls
that continuously went on my GoFundMe page, or continuously went on my Help Find Jenny from Seattle page, on Help Find Jenny, if you Help Find Jenny page. She was convinced, I guess there's these crimes loose out there, that thought I was into something. So that, I will never see a little justice. You know? And fuck you, I'm still standing.
I think it's amazing that you are still standing after going through all of this. Where is Jenny's case today? Is it still open in Mexico?
No, it's dead.
I think that somebody out there obviously knows what happened to Jenny. What would you say to anyone who might know something about what happened?
Clear your soul. Clear your conscience. Clear your conscience. I know. I know the driver's still alive. I know. I know what you did to this human being. I know people who know things out there, but they're still afraid. You can say it anonymously, but I know there's people, but they're afraid because either the government's going to get them or the cartels are getting them, which is one of the same in Mexico. Let's face that. Well, what I would say is you can come forward anonymously. I love that exposure, but in the end, if you've been quiet this one, you're a fucking coward and fuck you.
How can listeners out there help you keep Jenny's story alive? Maybe we can get the investigation going again. Is there anything that anyone can do to help find Jenny?
I tried everything I possibly could. It's all news cycles, right? So you refresh the news cycle, and you got to keep on getting new news and refresh the news cycle. So if somebody knows something, I just moved here from Seattle to Dallas to be with my family. I'm running 3 jobs. I would love to like get a GoFundMe page to send me money, but you know what I'm going to spend that on is tequila. So I would just try to get the news cycle, repost things. If you know other podcasts, if you know other people who can amplify this message, introduce me. And then also, if people need support, this is where the spiritual side comes in. I have the fucking playbook now. I have the fucking playbook. It ain't going to happen again. So I need to lend that playbook to someone who needs it. So if there's anyone out there that needs help, that's missing someone that's been gone for about a week, I know the ins and outs of what you can do and what you cannot do, at least in Mexico and the government, because I had to reach out to the American government. And so I'm calling to all them, not that, no, shall citizen, no. But at least I've opened up those channels on how to get a hold of those people. I couldn't do it, but I can probably support that. Mexico, you gotta embarrass the shit out of them. That's what the fuck you gotta do. I picked a billboard with her face of missing, and that just makes the police contend that the police are just sitting up there on their asses with their thumbs up their asses. They're not making any money anyways. They're putting a billboard and someone's missing and the cops aren't doing anything about it. That embarrasses the fuck out of them, and that gets them off their asses. Again, thank you for allowing you to be my psychiatrist in this, because I think I needed to get this out. I needed to get this out. This has been pinned up for years and years and years.
How can people reach out to you if by chance they know something or if they need help? I mean, it sounds like you do want to try to make something positive.
Yeah, just go to my Facebook page. Just send me an instant message. Be clear on who you are. Reach out and tell your story. There's been people in the past that I've helped. As much as I can at this point in time, well, by available time, I will help you the most I can, because that's what I have to do to get back. That, you know, I went from hating God, hating the universe, hating spirituality, hating whatever was out there, to accepting it and loving it and welcoming it into my spark.
And just so that everybody listening has the Facebook page, can you just tell what it is?
It's just my name, Jonathan Layhard. Here's the message that I want to convey it, and why I joined, is that you can get out of it. If I went through this shit, that I was going to get arrested and thrown to prison in China, people are fucking waiting to arrest me and call me a murderer on news. My wife's missing. I'm broke and I'm homeless. I have a good life. I'm in shape. I'm healthy and I'm happy. I just want people to know there's a way out and don't do anything stupid.
Those are wonderful words. They really are. John, thank you so much for sharing Jenny with us and for trusting us with her story. I know how hard it is to keep telling it, especially when there are still no answers. If you're listening right now and something about this case feels familiar, even in the smallest way, it matters. Jenny Chen was 26 years old when she disappeared in April of 2016. She's an Asian woman, about 5'3", around 110 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. She was last known to be in Oaxaca, Mexico, and may have been traveling by hitchhiking, possibly seen getting into a commercial truck, heading away from her planned route toward Cancun. If you were in that area, if you traveled through around that time, if you remember seeing someone who looked like Jenny, or hearing something that didn't sit right, even years later, you could be holding onto a piece of this story without even realizing it. Cases like Jenny's don't go cold because they don't matter. They go quiet because the right person hasn't come forward yet. And someone knows something. Even the smallest detail, something that feels insignificant to you, could help connect a timeline, confirm a sighting, or finally move this case forward. So if you do know anything, please come forward. You can contact your local authorities or reach out to the appropriate tip lines connected to Jenny's case. Because Jenny is not just a missing person. She's a daughter. She's a wife. She's someone who set out to see the world and never made it home. And for John and for her family, that story is still unfinished. And finally, remember to leave a review and rate this podcast 5 stars if you like the show, or hell, even if you don't. But either way, feel free to let me know what you think. Please follow The Last Trip on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod and subscribe on Patreon to support the show. You'll get extra research, videos, photos, and updates, and even learn more about my personal travels. That's patreon.com/thelasttrippodcast. I'm Jamie Beebe, bringing you your last trip and signing off until the next one. Thanks for listening.